Oh, we don't want niggers in our schools. We're not for integration. Keep those niggers in their place. We'll have a better nation. Our South Bend got along just fine till those integrators came down here stirring up a mess with outside agitators. They'll march, sit in, and demonstrate to try to take our schools. They want to change our southern ways with a brand new set of rules. No, we don't want niggers in our schools. We're not for integration. Keep those niggers in their place. We'll have a better nation. We must prove to Martin Luther we stand for what is right. No court of left-wing liberals can ever make him white. Form a solid line of white men, conservative will be. They'll never, ever overcome. Our schools will still be free. No, we don't want niggers in our schools. We're not for integration. Keep those niggers in their place. We'll have a better nation. We must prove to Martin Luther we stand for what is right. No court of left-wing liberals can ever make him white. Form a solid line of white men, conservatives will be. They'll never, ever overcome. Our schools will still be free. No, we don't want niggers in our schools. We're not for integration. Keep those niggers in their place. We'll have a better nation.
Yeah, that's right. Terrible Tommy here. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. And this is White Aryan Resistance Radio. And it is Moon's Day, the 8th of September, 2014. Beautiful day again in Indiana. Beautiful, perfect day. Sort of like a Canadian summer. It's in the 70s. Hardly any humidity and the sun shining. Wow. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show. And if you're not an associate of the radio show, well, it's $20 per month. And you get 6 hours of shows a week at least. Plus the latest news, we try to pick what's important to racially conscious white people. So you don't have to go all over the place trying to sort it out from all these other phony corporate media sources. And that's where you send your snail mail and to contact the webmaster for any problems that I can't solve. Well, you go to merchandiseresist@yahoo.com. And the webmaster will take care of you. And if she needs more help, I'll help you. And if we need more than that help, we'll call out the racial guard. No national guard, racial guard. Well, we've got a note in here from one of the associates. And I've gotten several in here this morning about Jack the Ripper may have been a Jew. We seem like we're always so anxious to put every crime in the world on a Jew. But anyhow, he says, Jack the Ripper, one of the most notorious serial killers in history, has been identified through DNA traces found on a shawl, claims a sleuth in a book out on Tuesday. The true identity of Jack the Ripper, whose grisly murders terrorized the murky slums of Whitechapel in East London in 1888, has been a mystery ever since, with dozens of suspects that include royalty and prime ministers down to bootmakers. But after extracting DNA from a shawl recovered from a scene of one of the killings, and come on, that's 1888, and suddenly they've got a shawl that's got the DNA on it, come on, which matches relatives of both the victim and one of the suspects. Jack the Ripper sleuth Russell Edwards claims the identity of the murderer is now beyond doubt. He says the infamous killer is Aaron Kosminski, a Jewish immigrant from Poland who worked as a barber. Edwards, a businessman interested in the Ripper story, bought a bloodstained Victorian shawl at auction in 2007. The story goes that it came from the murder scene of Ripper's fourth victim, Catherine Endowes, on September 30, 1888. Police acting Sergeant Amos Simpson, that was back when they called some white man Amos, who had been at the scene, got permission from his superiors to take it for his dressmaker's wife, who was subsequently aghast at the thought of using a bloodstained shawl. I don't blame her. Get that thing out of here, you dumb bastard. It had hitherto been passed down through the policeman's direct descendants. Yeah, right. That leaves a lot of room for doubt. Who had stored it in an unwashed in a box. I'll bet you could never get a conviction in a modern court based upon this information. It briefly spent a few years on loan to Scotland Yard's Crime Museum. Edwards sought to find out if the DNA technology could conclusively link the shawl to the murder scene. Working on the bloodstains, Dr. Jari Lauhalulahainahain, I don't know what the hell that name is, but anyhow, maybe an Icelander or some senior lecturer in molecular at Liverpool, John Moores University, isolated seven small segments of the mitochondrial DNA, which is passed down through the female line. They were a match with the DNA to Karen Miller, a direct descendant of Endowes, confirming her blood was on the shawl. Meanwhile, the stains exposed under the ultraviolet light suggested the presence of seminal fluid, otherwise known as cum. Dr. David Miller, reader in molecular andrology at the University of Leeds, managed to find cells from which DNA was isolated. With the help of genealogists, Edwards found a descendant of Kaminsky through the female line who offered samples of her DNA for a certain price, I imagine. Lohanen was then able to match DNA from the semen stains to Kaminsky's descendant. For Edwards, this places Kaminsky at the scene of Endowes' gruesome murder. Well, I want to tell you, boys and girls, that may very well be true, and I'd be last to try to get a Jew off the hook, but I don't trust DNA, primarily because the process may be almost infallible, but the people who do the testing aren't, because of stupid human failure in the labs full of niggers. Now you got these laboratories now, they got all kinds of black and other kinds of people that I say in many cases are unreliable checking these things out. So I think that maybe the story where the Jews eat the babies would be probably more believable. I don't give a shit if a Jew was Jack the Ripper. I know we got Jack the Ripper down in Texas. He's called retired President George W. Bush Jr. and Cheney, Wolfowitz, and all these guys, and Clinton and Obama. They make Jack the Ripper look like a Sunday school teacher or something like that. I mean, come on. So he killed what? Three or four people? Or even 10 people, or even a dozen people. Compare that to what our rippers, who are our leaders that we eulogize, and a lot of people worship these presidents. They're narcissistic, they're psychotic, they're pathological killers. Anyhow, just remember that. But anyhow, it's interesting. It's interesting. But watch out. If you get accused of a crime and they're resting the case on DNA and they want to get you, I think it's pretty easy in the lab to get the wrong result if you want it.
poverty in America was released today by the U.S. Census Bureau, and the news was headed in the wrong direction. Ray Suarez looks behind the numbers.
At a time when much of Washington is focused on helping the struggling middle class, today's report outlined the magnitude of the problem for 15% of Americans who live in poverty. More than 46 million lived below the federal poverty line last year, the highest number since the census began tracking that data 5 decades ago. The poverty line is lower than you might think. $11,139 a year for a single person, $22,314 a year for a family of four. The poverty rate itself is at the highest level since 1993. We examine what's happening with two people who study this carefully. Douglas Basharov is a professor of public policy at the University of Maryland. He joins us from Boston. And Isabel Sawhill is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Her work focuses on poverty and social policy. Isabel Sawhill, another 2.5 million people fell into poverty in 2009. At the risk of asking the obvious, is it unemployment that's driving that number?
It is definitely unemployment that's driving this increase in poverty rates and leading to the record numbers that you talked about in the lead-in. You know, the very best anti-poverty policy is to have a job. And with so many people out of work or having part-time jobs when they'd like full-time work, it's inevitable that the poverty rate is going to go up. We've done some projections of what the poverty rate will be mid-decade, a few years from now, if the unemployment projections that most economic forecasters are using hold true, and it's a very dismal picture.
Well, there's a few more minutes of that, but you get the message, and everybody is shocked. Well, where do these people fall out? They say they fall out. They fall into the poverty. Where do they fall out of? Well, they fell out of the middle class. Whether it's the lower middle class or the higher middle class. The middle class, they talk about they're spending all their time trying to do something for the middle class. Well, the middle class is pretty well gone. It's pretty much upper. If there's any middle class left, it's the upper middle class, the very top, and then the lower class, the plebes like you and me. And so anyhow, they're not talking so far about the figures that 3% of the country's population, their wealth rose by 12 or 13% last year. Yeah, right. So you wonder why people fell into poverty? Well, for the rich to have more money, more people have to be in poverty because capitalism loves nothing better than poverty. Now, some of those people out there, pull yourself up out of your bootstraps, will argue with me about that. I think it can be pretty well proven that as the capitalists and the 3% become richer and richer and richer, the poor people become, and more people fall out of the middle class into the poor, until where there's no middle class and we're back to the days of old Europe. So there's either peasants or there's royalty, or royalty's agents. That's about it, baby. And we're moving that way real fast. What's going to be interesting is how long it's going to take people in this country to decide it's time to cut some throats. Yes, I said it, cut some throats, because the rich and those shareholders that are raking in tremendous amounts of money, they're never going to change. No, they love that rich lifestyle, and they're not going to let any politician change it. They're not going to let any of their so-called laws change it, because who's going to enforce the laws when the lawmakers are being financed by the lawbreakers? So that leads me to my opinion is that either it ends up in civil war and revolution, or out in the field, boy, get back behind the plow with that old horse. You know, every once in a while on this alert system, I get an alert on my name, and somebody comes up with this old canard about the Metzgers being bankrupted in the D's persecution up in Portland, Oregon, way back. Well, set them straight. The Metzgers never went bankrupt. That's a myth, and it's achieved a high rate of mythology. If you can find any record of the Metzgers, Tom Metzger, filing for or getting bankruptcy, well, let me know. I've got a few hundred bucks here. I can challenge you, you know. But you got to come up with a few hundred if I'm right. Now, my early on, before it ever went to trial, my son John applied for bankruptcy, but he was refused by the court. So he attempted to go bankrupt, but he couldn't. And of course, I didn't even try. So whenever anybody says that the D's faction bankrupted the Metzgers, that's a bald-faced lie. Set them straight, or put your money where your mouth is. Whenever you got a axe to grind with someone, I say we demand the evidence. That's what I usually do. I think it works out better that way. Well, I and my main squeeze took our Sunday afternoon break and went to the movies, which we do quite a bit. And we went to see a film called The Giver. And this is not a film that's going to make lots of money because it requires some thinking. It's about a time in the future where the liberal types, those, what do you call them? Progressives, that's what they call them. And a lot of the stuff they say may sound really cool on paper, but in practice, it sucks, because it leads to what this basis of this film is all about in the future, where they've developed this so-called perfect society where almost everything's been eliminated, all bad things, but all the good things, a lot of the good things have been eliminated too. And they're living in this sort of a Stepford Wives, beautiful, allegedly beautiful system. And, you know, there's no want, no pain, no this and no that. And there happens to be among them some people who believe more in evolution. That's what I got out of the film, was that evolution is our friend. Struggle, of course, is our friend. Struggle is what brings on new life and new successful adaptations and so forth like that. And along with that, you've got to have your hard times, your horrible deaths and all that kind of stuff. It's all part of life. And I'd recommend this film to you. I hope that the few people in the theater that did come to watch it looked pretty deep into it and understand it. But it's good. It's really good. Makes you think. Let's get back to evolution. All this planning the perfect society is bullshit. Oh, yes, and Jeff Bridges was the main star, and he was very good. I like Jeff Bridges as an actor.
From great suffering, great pain, came a solution. Community, where disorder became harmony.
The way things look and the way things are very different.
What do you think would happen if you skipped your one injection?
I cannot prepare you for what's going to happen.
There's something missing from our life. Something that has been stolen.
When people have the freedom to choose, they choose wrong.
And that's the trailer for The Giver, which to me makes natural evolution look wonderful. And of course that brings along survival of the fittest and all that kind of stuff, which modern progressives, they don't want to talk about, or they want to degrade it, almost like saying, they don't come out and say it, evolution's a horrible thing, natural selection is no good, survival of the fittest is no good. Well, they can go kiss my white ass. Well, you can rest well this evening in Washington today. Da-da-da-da-da-da! Brother Clinton and Brother Bush Jr. have come together to smile, laugh, tell jokes, slap each other on the knee, and totally forget their crimes against humanity, because their crimes were against all races, and they have not been brought to justice. And the press is all out there, and they're at Clinton, I guess it was the Clinton's library or something, and they're just having a good time schmoozing. Remember how they used to fight on TV and all that stuff, Clinton and Bush and all that? It's all bullshit, boys and girls. And they talk about Hitler and Stalin and Mao Zedong and all that. These guys are worse. They're worse because they parade themselves as being uplifters of the downtrodden, and they love humanity. In fact, they're homicidal maniacs. You notice how the media all the time now, they keep saying, and now to a growing controversy. Here we go to a growing controversy. Well, who creates 2/3 of the controversy, or maybe more? It's the corporate press. That's their job, to spread fear and over concern over things that really don't concern you. Now, you know, back in the old days, there could be something really bad happen on the East Coast, and most of the time it took months for the word to get to the West Coast, or even if they even cared. I mean, because it wasn't their problem, there was nothing they could do about it. But the media, the corporate media's job is to keep us in constant uproar. This controversy, always controversy, keep us always in an uproar. That's the name of the game. And they create it. It's not an accident. And it's not just to make money on advertising, even though that's a big part of it. No, they want the whole population mixed up, confused, and not really knowing what for sure is happening, not feeling that there's anything they can do about it, and to where they just totally give up and walk around like a bunch of zombies. Or they retreat to some political idea or some church, religion. They like to corral people in religion as much as possible, because no one follows orders any better than people who are religious fanatics. There's always the guru, the main guy. Like I used to tell my mother, she used to say, talk about religion, she'd always be talking about what her preacher said. I said, well, you don't have a religion. You worship your preacher. Your preacher's your guru. Whatever he says, you repeat. You know? Oh, son, you're going to go to hell. You know, most people are all excited about this Islamic State. They're getting people all excited. They're going to be here any moment. They're in Mexico. They're probably coming through Canada. We've heard all this shit before for decades, whether it be the Chinese commies were coming across the North Pole or up from Mexico and all that. This is the same way they always start this stuff up. It was, unfortunately, it was Americans, Bush and Cheney and all those boys who really set this all up and caused the rise of all these factions and different factions coming together, and finally the big one, the Islamic State. And I have nothing against the Islamic State. There's nothing I can do to stop them from chopping off a couple of heads once in a while. There's nothing that I can do to make them. And since I'm not going to hang out in the Middle East, frankly, Charlotte, I don't give a damn. And maybe the Islamic State is what they need over there. As long as they stay over there, that's okay with me. If they come over here, well, we might have to chop their heads off. But as long as the Islamic State is causing the corporates trouble and all and the money people over there around the world, it's sort of funny. One thing I find interesting, though, is these kids that become, you know, they may have been Christian fanatics or lukewarm Christians that are becoming Islamic fanatics and joining, going over there and joining up with them to be cannon fodder. Oh, that is something else. Well, now they say they're going to identify these people and pull their citizenship and all that kind of stuff. Well, wait a minute. For many, 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 many decades, there's been people who left the United States to fight on some other side. I mean, lots of Canadians went to Europe and fought. Of course, they were still under the king, I guess, or the queen. But there was been all people all down through history that have gone from their mother country to fight on the side of somebody in another country. So what about all the Jews that go from the United States and other countries to Israel to fight in the IDF? Well, the difference is that they are called allies, great people, wonderful people, children of God, and great humanitarians that fight for humanitarian principles. On the other hand, if a guy leaves the United States to go fight for the Islamic State, he's a terrorist. Well, there is no terrorism in my book anyhow. There's only unconventional warfare. Terrorism is a great buzzword. See, the system always picks out labels that are, for some reason, they must take a long time to develop and try these names out, like neo-Nazi and all that. See, there were no Nazis in Germany. There were only National Socialists that belonged to the Workers' Party. And so the Germans and the people in the National Socialist Party, they didn't come up with this Nazi. No, it was a term created by the Jews and their Christian friends. And so they do that every time. So terrorism, we're always at war with terrorism. But what is terrorism? Define terrorism. Well, it's just unconventional warfare. That by calling it terrorism means that your alleged enemy, when your alleged enemy does something, he's a terrorist. When your friends do something, they're freedom fighters. Yeah, so anyhow, there you go. All those IDF guys from all over the United States. But they're not going to stop them. They won't pull their citizenship. In fact, they've got dual citizenship anyhow. As far as I'm concerned, any white person, whether it's for religious fanaticism or however they go to a non-white country or basically a non-white part of the world and they get killed, it doesn't bother me a bit. I don't lose one second of sleep over it. In fact, I'm sort of a proponent of it. When these people go to Africa and catch Ebola, they're defying Mother Nature. They're at war with nature. Nature says these people in these areas of Africa live horribly, unsanitarily, and operate using all kinds of unsafe practices and sex and everything else, and it's time to weed them out. Well, here comes Christian Zionists and others all come running to save them. So they're declaring war on Mother Nature. And Mother Nature, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature, as that old ad on TV used to be about, I think it was a margarine. It's not nice to fool Mother Nature. And so Mother Nature is going to whack these people too. And whenever a Christian fanatic goes to the cesspools of the world and dies, doesn't bother me a bit. In fact, mark it up to a victory of Mother Nature, of the natural order. Yeah. Well, I see this new Boeing passenger plane has got problems. Yeah, but the workers are saying it's unsafe. Many of the workers that say they won't fly on one, they won't go anyplace on one because they're unsafe. There was a tremendous amount of drug use in putting a plane together. That reminds me of when they were putting the San Onofre nuclear plant together. One of my best friends worked there, and he said, Tom, most of the people there are on drugs all the time, cocaine, pot, whatever. He said, it's scary that they're building a nuclear plant. Another reason the plane is unsafe is because Boeing bought up McDonnell Douglas airplane factory, and McDonnell Douglas was on the verge of collapse at the time, so they bought them up just dirt cheap, and they incorporated all the bad business practices and technical practices that McDonnell Douglas had. Now, I used to work for McDonnell Douglas for about 6 years, and I knew Donald Douglas Sr., and I've been in his home at least a couple of times up in Rolling Hills in Southern California. I was his technician for his television, his radios, and so forth like that. And so that's how I got to know him. He used to take me up there to his home in the company car, and I'd do my thing. So I got to talk to Donald Douglas Sr. He would roll over in his grave if he knew what had happened to his company that had become almost collapsed, and Boeing bought it up. Now, the bad practices of the Douglas aircraft got into, they've inflicted on Boeing. So the standard of quality that Boeing had in the past is dropping like a rock. It's going to be interesting to see whether Boeing's going to sit there with all these planes they put together and maybe they'll go broke. I do know that Donald Douglas Jr., who took over the company, wasn't worth a shit. I think his dad knew it too. And another point, that was during the Cold War when I worked there. And I'll tell you, the waste that went on in that company was unbelievable. It was absolutely unbelievable. I've told you this story before, I don't know how long ago, but at one time there was Donald Douglas, or the son of Donald Douglas, wanted a yacht built. I don't know, 30, 40-foot yacht. And so they went to this warehouse on the property in Santa Monica and started building this yacht. Well, the guys got in their head every time they bought a part for this yacht, they'd buy a part, and they were building their own yacht in secret. How you can build a yacht in secret is beyond me. But they actually constructed two yachts. And the reason the guys who were doing this got caught with this other yacht was they tried to put it on a big trailer and sneak it out of the company grounds on Sunday, and they caught them at the gates. That's how much fraud and waste was going on at Douglas Aircraft. Guys were stealing the company blind. One guy was stealing a big vise. And he passed out going out the gate because he'd wrapped the wire around his waist and hung the vise, this, I don't know, 30, 40-pound vise between his legs. And he collapsed. Yeah, that's how they caught him. But that was going on all the time at Douglas Aircraft. They had bookies all over the plant, too, that were placing bets at Hollywood Park. And every day this guy would come through and take the bets. And he'd jump in the company car and go down to Hollywood Park and make the bets. And then come back later and make the payoffs. Yeah. You know, what's so funny and in some ways sad about the situation is when your enemy doesn't like you, nothing you do can be any good. Or if you do anything that is effective and good, they forget it ever happened. Like when I worked for Douglas Aircraft, I worked in a laboratory with a top secret clearance, working on the Apollo program and also ICBM stuff. When I was in the military overseas, I had a top secret clearance also, working in some pretty interesting communication. And when I was at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, when I was in school, electronics, after I joined the Army, they wanted me to go into cryptograph and work at the Pentagon, but I didn't want to stay in the United States. I wanted to travel. And I have certificates from the company, Douglas Aircraft, for innovations that I developed and so forth like that. Did you ever hear anything like this? Did you ever read anything like this in the media? Did you ever hear D's or any of them talking about this stuff? The only thing you'll ever know about me, you know, a lot of people, maybe some of you know more, but the only thing most people know that I was a TV man from Fallbrook, California. TV repair man and satellite installer. Well, I'll tell you why I left Douglas Aircraft. Simply because I didn't like to work under plant conditions where the only time you see the sun is when you get outside the building, maybe at lunch, and you punch the clock. I didn't want to live my life like that. So that's the reason, one of the reasons why I left the company and was able to develop my own business and live where I wanted to outside L.A., which worked out quite well. But when anybody tells you that a good television technician is a dumb person, well, you tell them they're full of shit, because it takes quite a bit of training and quite a bit of knowledge to be a television repairman back in the day. And so, but anyhow, that's all over the internet. Metzger was just a TV repairman. I've been all over the place, man. They were checking me out for clearances, even went to my high school and everything else. So, well, let's get on to something else beside Terrible Tommy. I want to thank my Michigan friend. I received a card in the mail. I appreciate that. And I know you once in a while do that, and I appreciate it. Well, there's a new disease out there. It's called Enterovirus EVD68. The disease is causing alarms in the Midwest. Well, it's the first I've heard about it, so I guess I better get prepared. Let's see what it's all about. Obviously, it's coming in from south of the border.
A couple days ago, I couldn't breathe at all.
The oxygen mask is a necessity.
My head started hurting after my lungs started sort of closing up.
13-year-old Will Cornejo almost didn't make it.
White as a ghost, blue lips, he just passed out. Had his eyes rolled back in his head and had to call 911.
Now at Rocky Mountain Hospital for Children, Will's likely dealing with what's known as Enterovirus 68. It makes breathing challenging and requires round-the-clock treatment to overcome.
Our pediatric floor is full of patients with pretty severe respiratory distress.
Will was at risk because he already deals with asthma. Yet doctors say all kids under 5 are also prone to the virus. That first appears as the common cold.
To go from a cold to, you know, being probably minutes away from death, that's kind of scary.
Despite the tube, this eighth grader is on the mend.
Yeah, I mean, I feel better than I did before.
His family sharing their story, hoping parents will pay attention until there's an all clear.
It was pretty scary.
Now, this is a respiratory virus that has sent hundreds of children to hospitals in Missouri. It's causing alarm across the Midwest and beyond. 10 states have contacted the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to help investigating clusters of the virus that's being blamed for the illness. health officials say they're still figuring out what's going on. The bug that appears to be causing most of the concern has a typical arcane name, Enterovirus EVD68, but many of its symptoms are very common. Here's what you need to know about the virus. Enteroviruses, which bring on symptoms like a very intense cold, aren't unusual. They're actually very common. When you have a bad summer cold, often you have is an enterovirus, said Mark Palanch, a virologist and director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Division of Viral Diseases. There are more than 100 types of enteroviruses, causing about 10 to 15 million infections in the United States each year, according to the CDC. They're carried in the intestinal tract and often spread to other parts of the body. The season often hits its peak in September as summer ends and fall begins. Well, there you go. So why all the concern now? What's the unusual at the moment is the high number of hospitalizations. The virus has sent more than 30 children a day to a Kansas City, Missouri hospital, where about 15% of the youngsters were placed in intensive care, officials said. It's worse in terms of scope of critically ill children who require intensive care. I would call it unprecedented, said Dr. Mary Ann Jackson, a director for infectious diseases at Children's Mercy Hospital, where about 475 children were recently treated. I've practiced for 30 years in pediatrics, and I've never seen anything like this, she said. So there you go. Thank the Third World and all our new friends and neighbors for more and more of this, which, of course, you have known, I've known, and I've predicted for years and years that with uncontrolled borders, of course, that means uncontrolled diseases, and you get what you pay for. But as long as you want to put the love of humanity and people from other countries ahead of your own, well, you're going to have to suffer. Well, the Chaldeans have problems. These people are from Iraq, and I'm sure mostly non-white. It's back to school Monday. Kids may grumble, but consider this. With schools doubling as shelters, classes have been postponed in northern Iraq, especially among the Yazidi religious sect. Aid officials say it will be months before all those children of the displaced families, including many Christians, can be accommodated in classrooms. The Chaldean Christians, many of whom settled in the larger Detroit area, are watching the disintegration of the religious community in Iraq with dismay and horror. Quote, we wish to scream, but there are no ears that wish to hear, unquote, Bishop Francis Y. Kalabat wrote recently in a letter posted in the church lobby in Southfield, Michigan. The Russian Orthodox Church has strenuously denied any role in stirring up or aiding separatist turmoil in Ukraine, but evidence of closer ties between the church or individual Orthodox priests and the pro-Russian cause is growing, according to the New York Times. Well, the Vatican announced it has accepted the resignation of Ireland's Cardinal Sean Brady, whose tenure was best beset by clerical child sex abuse scandals and claims he helped to cover up the abusers. Well, they wouldn't do that. Well, those Negroes are having fun down there in Burundi. Three Italian nuns were killed over the weekend in a parish in the north of Burundi's capital, officials and a priest in the African state said on Monday. What can you say? Well, there's some people you just can't feel sorry for. Family members of September 11 victims are taking a stand against Islamophobia with a new bus ad campaign. Quote, Islamophobia is not pretty, the ad reads. Quote, let's build bridges, not walls. Hate hurts, hope heals. Well, isn't that nice of you? In sports news, Serena Williams, the black tennis player, thanked Jehovah for her win over Caroline Wozniacki and for capturing her third U.S. Open. Here's what God had to say. And Serena Williams, just thank me. You're welcome, Serena. That's what I do all day, decide the winner of women's tennis matches. Keeps me real busy. Well, I see S. Truett Cathay, who grew his boneless chicken sandwich business from one store in Georgia to a Chick-fil-A chain, a $5 billion company with more than 1,800 locations, died early Monday morning. He was 93. He died as a result of eating that rotten, crap, non-grass-fed chicken. I mean, you know, that chicken in those big corporations, they're serving you. That's not worthy of a dog eating it. Well, around the country, kids are settling into their classrooms for the new school year, unaware of the wars over curriculum, teachers' evaluations, and school funding, and other hot-button education topics. Just north of New York City in the district of East Ramapo in Rockland County, one such battle has been brewing for nearly a decade, churning up racial and ethnic tensions as it goes. Well, I thought race mixing led to happy people. The school board in 2005, the school board in East Rampo underwent a change when Hasidic Jews living in the area voted enough Orthodox Jews into office to make them a majority. Yet by and large, the children in the public schools the board oversees come from African American Negroes, Caribbean Negroes, Latin American households, illegal aliens, while the children of the area's Hasidic Jews get private education. When the school budget was severely cut in 2009 and 2010, some community members said the board was siphoning money to support programs for the Jewish kids at the expense of everyone else in town. What's new? Indeed, tempers grew so hot that some community members joined in a lawsuit filed against the board in 2012. That suit is still making its way through the legal system. Did Hasidic Jews in East Ramapo stack the school board so they could siphon off money from public schools and subsidize their own children's education at the expense of poor, mostly non-white, non-Jewish kids? Oh, they wouldn't do that. That's what Batya Ungar Sargon wanted to find out. This past spring and summer, she repeatedly visited East Ramapo to try to separate myth from reality. She wrote in depth an investigative story about the school district battles there in Tablet magazine, and she joins Vox Tablet host Sarah Every to discuss what the mainstream media gets wrong in their reporting on East Ramapo. What's it got right, and why you have to do the math and visit the cafes, supermarkets, and libraries to find out the real story. See, the town is totally taken over. I don't know. They don't even mention white kids. I mean, this is what's happening, town by town by town. Orthodox Jews, other Jews, you got all the blacks, all the Caribbeans, all the Mexicans, just eating town after town after town. And it's not going to take long until that's it, just like there where the Orthodox Jews took over the school board, and their word is law now. Gee, I thought we were all the same. Jewish women without any family history of cancer may still carry the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genetic mutations. Oh, wow. Gee, another Jewish con. I can't believe it. Charles Schrem, once a rising star in the world of Bitcoin entrepreneurialism, faced what could be his lowest moment Thursday in a 14th-floor federal court in Lower Manhattan. Quote, I knew what I was doing was wrong, the 24-year-old told Judge Jed Rekoff. I'm pleading guilty because I am guilty. Schrem, a graduate of Yeshiva of Flatbush, pleaded guilty to one count of aiding and abetting the operations of an unlicensed money transfer business. The charge could send him to prison for 5 years. Oh, a Jew boy doing something naughty. I can't believe it. Well, here's another dumbhead. A Houston resident was sentenced to more than 2 years in jail for calling in a bomb threat to Congregation Beth Israel, a local synagogue, in April 2013. He faces 33 months in jail after pleading guilty to threatening to bomb a synagogue as well as making a bomb threat over a telephone. Of course, you know these kind of people never would do it. So they go to jail really for nothing but being stupid. Dante Furse, 33, was sentenced in federal court for threatening to bomb the congregation Beth Israel. The statement said Furse was an ex-convict with a long criminal record and a history of mental illness. U.S. District Judge Kenneth Hoyt also ordered Furse to pay $13,000 in restitution and serve 3 years of supervised release after his prison term. Well, they'll never get that 13 grand because he's going to be in trouble all the time. According to KHOU.com, Houston police said that Furse called the synagogue on April 30th, 2013 and reportedly said that there were no white Jewish people, only black Jewish people, and said he was going to blow up the temple, unquote. He later called back and made more explicit racially charged statements. How about that? Well, college students, here's something you'll be thrilled to death to hear. Yep, here we go.
This week, hundreds of thousands of students started classes, colleges, and universities. And one thing is increasingly clear. By the time they graduate, most students are going to be leaving with a lot more than just a tacky polyester robe and a copy of Oh, the Places You'll Go That Their Tearful Aunt Got Them. They'll be leaving with this.
7 of 10 graduating students left college last year in debt. The total bill due for students in America tops $1 trillion.
That's right. Student debt in the U.S. is now bigger than debt from credit cards and auto loans, and is second only to mortgages. Essentially, student debt is like HPV. If you go to college, you're almost certainly going to get it. And if you do, it will follow you for the rest of your life. Because legally, student debt is a special kind of debt.
It is the most collectible kind of debt there is. It is non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. They will garnish your wages. They will intercept your tax refunds. They will sue you in court.
Well, they won't stop there. They'll steal your wallet. They'll pawn your baby shoes. They will shrink themselves down to 2 inches high, hide in your pocket, and take that money back one dime at a time. Student debt has tripled in the past decade. It has surpassed Bob Marley's greatest hits album as the thing seemingly every college student has. How did this happen? Well, more than 90% of student debt is subsidized by the federal government. And it all started with such good intentions. Here is one of the federal student loan program's early champions.
Poverty must not be a bar to learning, and learning must offer an escape from poverty.
Escape from poverty. By the way, the single worst Kurt Russell movie ever made. But a higher education system open to all was one of LBJ's top priorities, along with creating, of course, a Libyan pool party in Vietnam and finding a pair of pants that could contain his gigantic testicles. Now, that last one might sound like a joke, but listen to this actual phone conversation that he had in the Oval Office with a representative from the Hagar Clothing Company.
The crotch down where your nuts hang is always a little too tight. So when you make them up, give me an inch that I can let out there because they cut me. It's just like riding a wire fence. Let's see if you can't leave me about an inch from where the zipper ends around under my back to my bunghole.
We all thought the B in LBJ stood for Baines, but it actually stands for Balls, Balls, My Big Bulbous Balls Are Too Close to My Bunghole. Isn't history fun? But like LBJ's testicles, the federal student loan program has now swollen to uncomfortable proportions. One reason for this might be that in recent years, states have slashed funding for higher education by 23%. Public institutions have responded by raising tuition rates, forcing students to take out ever larger loans. Why else do you think the colleges have so many f***ing a cappella groups? They know they sound stupid, they just can't afford instruments anymore. Another consequence of these cuts has been that some community colleges have been forced to reduce capacity, leading to things like a nursing program in North Carolina with a waiting list just to get on the waiting list. Because that is what you need in the land of tobacco and barbecue, a shortage of nurses. But all this shows that people in this country, that they want to go to school to better their lives. And it is good that they have broad access to federal funds to help them do that. The problem is, this is where we meet one of the biggest drivers of student debt, for-profit schools, like University of Phoenix and ITT Tech. Most of them are publicly traded on Wall Street, and they run commercials like this.
One evening, I was watching TV, and an ITT Tech commercial came on, and I decided to give them a call. I think my education has paid off tremendously. I got into the field of aerospace. It's been over 12 years now. There's nothing I would change about my life. We've been married almost 10 years now. We have two beautiful boys. Everything is perfect.
That's nice. Although I will say, there's something about the phrase, everything is perfect, that I find inherently suspicious. Because the only other person who says that is Janice in accounting, and she secretly puts Jim Beam in her coffee cup and repeats, keep you together, you can do this, Janice, into the bathroom mirror 5 times a day. For-profit schools account for nearly a third of all student loans, despite having just 13% of our country's students. That is way out of proportion. And part of why for-profit schools account for so much student debt is that they are not cheap.
I was surprised to learn how expensive tuition at the for-profits is. 5 to 6 times the cost of a community college, and as much as twice a 4-year state university.
Wow. 5 to 6 times the cost of a community college. Plus, you don't even get to hang out with a study group full of lovable scamps for let's say 6 seasons in a movie. But if you are wondering why they charge so much, it is nothing to do with the quality of education.
If you take a look at for-profit colleges, the analysts will tell you that anywhere between 20 and 25% of the total revenue of the company is in sales and marketing. About a quarter. In most cases, the faculty are in the 10 to 20% range.
They spend half the amount on teachers that they do on marketing. Think about that. He's basically saying, hey, teachers, we're not saying you don't matter. We're just saying ads about you matter twice as much. No, one for you, two for a spot during Wayne Brady. That's about fair. The thing is, from a purely business perspective, that disparity makes some kind of sense.
When I go and buy perfume for my mom, the chemicals in the bottle and the bottle itself amount to about 50 cents. The advertising amounts to $5 or $6.
Okay, for a start, stop buying perfume for your mom, you f***ing creep.
I like the way you smell, Mom. You smell good.
And secondly, perfume is not education, although I will say both do market themselves aggressively. And with perfume, it's spraying it into people's eyes when they walk into a department store. And for for-profit schools, it's actually even worse.
Zara Crowley was a recruiter at the for-profit Westwood College in 2007. Crowley says she quit because she couldn't continue preying on low-income youth and using something called pain points.
Pain point would be something, they work at McDonald's, they don't want to be like their parents. We'd turn it on them and say, I thought you wanted to do something with your life. Do you want to work at McDonald's for the rest of your life?
Yeah. They are told to hit people's pain points. The only professionals who should be doing that are dominatrixes or emo bands. That's it. And this pain point approach seems to be an industry-wide technique. This is an actual slide some ITT Tech recruiters were shown during training. That photo is from Marathon Man, where Laurence Olivier famously played a Nazi torturer. And it's maybe not saying much for your business model if your essential logic is, hey guys, this worked really well for the Nazis, let's at least give it a go. But if you do sign up for one of these schools, what kind of education are you going to get? Well, remember the ITT Tech graduate from earlier and his absolutely perfect f***ing life? Well, it actually says on the screen that he graduated with an associate's degree in engineering from ITT's Sylmar campus. And we checked their public filings, and out of 115 students who enrolled in that program in the class of 2012, three quarters didn't graduate, and only 13 found work in that field, meaning everyone else would have genuinely been better off studying engineering at Hogwarts, because at least that way they have a fucking owl to show for it. And even for those who do graduate, job hunting might be a little difficult, as students from a Corinthian College nursing program found.
I've been on countless interviews, and they all asked if I've ever been in a hospital, and I would have to tell them, we never set foot in a hospital, ever. We went to a museum of Scientology for our psychiatric rotation.
What? Scientologists do not believe in psychiatry. Their museum is literally called Psychiatry and Industry of Death. Going to the Museum of Scientology for your psychiatric rotation is certifiably insane. Or evidence of a build-up of thetans in your system. You teach the controversy. Now, full disclosure, we asked Corinthian about this, and they requested that we point out a few things, such as the fact that those women later sued the school, a financial settlement was reached, and that those women later went on to become registered nurses. And also that us not mentioning those facts to you would constitute reckless disregard for the truth. I mean, not the kind of reckless disregard for the truth that would lead you to send medical students to a f***ing Scientology museum, but, you know, pretty reckless. Pretty reckless nonetheless. They also wanted us to take clear and extensive note of subsequent events. And in interest of doing that, you should know that this summer, after a government investigation of their job placement numbers, Corinthian colleges have agreed to sell or close every school they operate in the US. I presume that that's what they wanted us to tell you, so job done. Now, to be fair here, the federal government does try to regulate these schools. They are only allowed a mere 90% of their funding to come from federal loans. However, for-profit schools have found themselves a truly horrifying loophole.
The 90-10 rule says that the schools can only have 90% of their money coming from loans, but the other 10% could come from veteran loans. They exempted the veterans benefits. So these schools have gone after the veterans benefits as a way to leverage their ability to sign up more students.
They're going after veterans, and the only time going after veterans is okay is when you let them walk through the door in front of you, not when you try to take their f***ing money. Now, for-profit schools took in $1.7 billion in GI Bill money in the last reported school year alone, and this is the length to which Ashford University was willing to go to get that sweet, sweet budget-assisting veteran dollar.
I went to a Marine base in North Carolina, and I found that one of the for-profit colleges was sending a recruiter to the Wounded Warriors Barracks, where she was signing up brain-injured Marines who even had difficulty remembering what courses they were taking.
Holy shit. I will say this for for-profit schools. They've just given us all a first-class education in the depths of human depravity. We all have a diploma in that now. And here is where I actually have some good news and some bad news for you. The good news is, a few years back, the Obama administration proposed tighter, gainful employment standards. The bad news is, everything that happened after that. The for-profit industry spent $10 million in lobbying that year, and also, and this, thankfully, is a fun bit, their trade group inundated the government with thousands of letters from ordinary students and educators asking them not to tighten the regulations. And let me read one to you. It reads, I am a career college student at institution studying program. Institution is providing me with the education and training necessary to obtain the job I've always wanted as a career. Many, many people didn't even bother filling in the blanks. Couldn't they at least have done it a bit like Mad Libs? You could have gone to Butt Cheese University seeking a degree in Wiener Studies. Go the extra mile. And the worst thing is, the campaign worked. The gainful employment rules were weakened and eventually struck down completely. The latest version of the rules are expected by November, and the for-profit school trade group, APSCU, is still lobbying hard against them. And if you'd like to let APSCU know how you feel about their industry's behaviour, we've actually prepared a form letter for you, which reads, to whom it may concern, I am, name here, a human being with, describe at least some level of sense, who is sick of your synonym for bullshit. Whatever the benefit for for-profit schools, your trade group is protecting some of the worst actors, and additional insults, ideas for places to cram this letter once rolled up, proposals for human waste products to be eaten, thank you for your time, name here again. Feel free to go online, copy this letter, please do not bother to fill it in at all, and send it to APSCU at this address. And that might make you feel a little bit better, but it will only be temporary, because the student debt problem is far bigger than just for-profit schools. If they all went away, student debt problem would still be here, because our leaders have decided that while education is incredibly important, it is not important enough to actually pay for. So, with that in mind, let me speak right now to all current freshmen in college who have student loans. Okay, you need to stop watching this show right now. You don't have time for this. Get out there and enjoy the f*** out of your college experience, because you may be paying for it for the rest of your life. I'm serious. Drink beer from a funnel. Kidnap a mascot. Find out if you're gay or not, and even if you are not, have some gay experiences. Do it now, it doesn't count. Become that weird guy on campus who rides a unicycle from class to class. Find out whoever the Winklevoss twins of your school are and steal their idea for a website. And shoot fireworks out of every bodily orifice you can find. Do it now. Please, make sure your college years are the best ones of your life, because thanks to the debt that we are saddling you with, they almost certainly will be. Get up there and do it! Go nuts! Go crazy!
Well, they made it sound funny, but it's not very funny to all the young guys and young women that are out there trying to get an education. But I thought that at least you could have a little levity on our show here. At the same time, you're putting the gun up to your head and getting ready to pull the trigger. That's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow. And remember, the password is tick, 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 psst, 14-5, and shut up.